This is going to be the highlight of your birthday.
John, are you saying happy birthday to me?
Not really.
Happy birthday.
Aaron, thank Mike.
It is. I'm a young 25. So I did get a card from my mother and father. I must thank them. They haven't forgot me yet. But for those that don't know me, I'm the youngest of five boys. And we come from a large extended family, so we're very close. But yes, it is my birthday. So,
happy birthday.
What is the challenge of as you approach a draft without having the first two picks?
So, John, I'm going to answer that question here. But what I'd like to start out by saying first, guys and gals, is that as it relates to the draft process, you know, it's important for me to touch on a few things. You know, this is a process that starts roughly the end of May, early June. And here we are, the end of April, getting ready to select eight players. And our scouts are on the road from the month of August all the way up through the month of November. They go back out on the road into January, into February, to the combines, to the bowl games. And then obviously the pro days, but also our coaches get involved. But equally, our medical staff, our security staff, like this is a large, encompassing process. And what I'd like to do, John, before I go any further, is just thank the scouting staff, the coaches, the medical staff, the security staff, our football operations staff. They've done an excellent job here and all come together as a team. And me getting here in January and kind of putting the plan in place that I wanted to, I just want to thank them for buying in and doing their part to help this be a great draft for us. Just to go back to your question, John, as it relates to not having a first and second round pick, there's certainly challenges involved with that in terms of getting blue chip talent and blue chip prospects. But the focus that I have had and our staff has had here has been we are going to get a chance to get four players in the top 103 in this draft. So if things were standard and we had a first and second round pick, a third and fourth round pick, that would still give us four players in the top 103. Now, although they might not be player 50 or 60, we're still going to get four players, we believe, in the top 103. So we're very positive that we'll be able to get contributing players at any one of those picks in the third and the fourth round.
All right, in terms of trades and the possibilities of moving up with some of the ammunition you have, the draft picks, how special a player would it have to be for you to want to go, whether it's the first or the second round, to want to move up?
So on a case-by-case, Aaron, we'll measure opportunity when it meets itself. If there's a certain player that's fallen down on the board that we had a very good grade on, certainly we're always going to talk about that scenario if we have the ammunition and the latitude to go up. I would tell you, Aaron, historically, I would much prefer to go down than I ever would to go up to get more at-bats, to accumulate more good players. But on a case-by-case basis, if we're honoring the draft board and we see a player that potentially might be slipping down the draft board and we have the opportunity to go get them and be aggressive, we'll measure that as well.
Could it change your approach to the draft, not having the first two? Like, are there certain players you know you're not going to have a chance at? So do you not scout them or scout them less?
So part of the process of, in this player evaluation is mixing the pro scouting element with the college draft process as it relates to how we were going to solve some of the issues on our roster with personnel. We feel like with some of the things we did in free agency, John, we're going to put us in position in the draft where you're not going to get forced to have to draft a player based on need. So, and the players that we acquired, both on the offensive line and in the secondary, give us position flexibility within the group. So at least now we feel like we're in position that if we draft players now, we're hopefully drafting the best available player in that regard. The best combination of a pick, John, is when you take the best available player and also meets a team need.
Think about this draft, and you look at a lot of people say this is a good defensive back draft. Is that an opinion you have that it's a solid draft at that position?
Yeah, I would echo that, but I see that at all levels within this draft, Aaron. Like, I see opportunities if you're picking day one, day two, and day three. Especially day three, I see opportunities in the secondary where you could get players at any level in this draft, whether you needed a starter, a contributor, or a depth reserve who could be a special teams player.
The Texans lead the league since 2006 with players who've been drafted in the first round and signed another contract. How helpful is that to you when you're trying to build a team and you have that talent there?
So we don't have a first-round pick this year as it relates to that, but my philosophy, Sarah, has always been if we can draft, develop, groom, and extend our own, that'll be the first thing I'll always try to do in terms of philosophy and try to how we want to build a team career-wise and longevity-wise. I do subscribe to that philosophy.
There's less time in OTAs than there was under the previous CBA, which means that there's less time that the coaches have with individual players. If you look at how ready the players are coming out and what things do you have in place to make those players feel comfortable once they get in the building?
So we work within the rules that we obviously have, but one element Coach O'Brien and I have often discussed is that the critical element of player development. So that when players come on campus and we get them in our building, is maximizing their abilities, but from like the coaching, the fundamentals, the technique, our sports performance element, our strength and conditioning element. So how can we maximize this player's skill set in a 1 to 3 year window so that they can be exactly who we think they're going to become? Although they're this today, we see this career arc where they can be year two, year three, year four down the line. So in our program, we put a large emphasis on player development, teaching technique, teaching them football, and obviously body types, sports performance. We try to maximize what they can be from a physical standpoint.
Do you factor in how NFL ready a particular player is coming in?
Sure. We grade upside, and I would probably answer that in a way that, you know, we grade upside as it relates to a guy's physical dimensions and the intangible profile. So the upside part is a critical part of how we put final grades on players. So perhaps he may be a fourth or fifth corner today, but maybe in 2 or 3 years in our player development program, he can be a third corner. Perhaps he's an eighth or ninth offensive lineman today, but with our strength and conditioning program and how we're going to teach him football with technique, fundamentals, and physical growth, perhaps he'll be a sixth or seventh offensive lineman a year or 2 years down the road.
In terms of the undrafted process, you're only going to have, unless you turn over your roster a lot after the draft, only a few spots. How attractive is that to make you guys? Obviously, you kept undrafted, you developed them, but in terms of your recruiting and telling players that now as they head into the draft?
It's a very good question, Aaron, and this is a large point of emphasis in for our scouting staff. And we put a great deal of time into the priority free agent process, and we have examples on our team. One notable from last year, obviously, was Dylan Cole. We've had other notables in the past. Kaiv Fairburn, our kicker, Joel Heath comes to mind, where these are guys that we got in the undrafted free agent process and they made our team. And I would say it started with having a vision for the player when we would scout that player. And some of those guys, Aaron, that we got that were undrafted free agents, perhaps we had a draftable grade on, but then they just happened to go undrafted and we pursued them. So for me, I call that the eighth round, and we're always trying to extend the draft.
I'm looking for a starting quarterback, but there's a lot of talk. Can you talk about, they're saying could be six quarterbacks taken for the first time since 83. What do you think about that?
Well, number one, I would respond this way, John. Regardless of who we have on our team at quarterback right now, one thing I learned under Coach Parcells is you are always developing the position, year in, year out. You are always contingency planning. So whether you have a starter, a number two, or a number three, you're doing that at every position, but especially quarterback. You're always contingency planning and always planning for the future. So regardless of who we have here today, we are always planning for tomorrow. So quarterback is no different than any other position. But obviously with our situation last year and what happened here with our team losing Deshaun, we're doing our best to fortify the position so that our spots 1, 2, and 3 are locked and loaded, and we can feel confident in every level.
What do you think about the overall quarterback crop that talking about four could go in the first five picks?
They all have their strengths. They all have their weaknesses. I certainly think that if you were a team that needed a quarterback, it's a supply and demand issue. It's not a supply and demand issue per se for this, just because of the draft this year, but it's throughout the league. So if you need a quarterback, John, you got to try to strategize a way to go and get one.
Fifth draft here. What's it like not to go into a draft looking for a quarterback?
Well, it certainly gives you a level of comfort because it's such an important position. But I'll just allude back to what I just said. But we're always planning for the future. So certainly, yes, I feel confident and comfortable that we have a player like Deshaun on our team right now. But I'm always going to be trying to fortify the position as it relates to spots 2 and 3 as it relates down the road.
All right, just on Deshaun, and obviously lots made of not having that first-round pick. I mean, everybody wants to have one every year. But just to have that kind of player, looking back at the trade and where you are now, just how good do you guys feel, even though it would be nice to have a first-round pick?
Sure. And that's the price you pay to get a player such as Deshaun. So there's positives to that. The positives to that, naturally, we feel very confident about our starting quarterback. But I'm also looking a year down the road. I'm not just looking in the now. I'm thinking about our first-round pick next year. We have 2 twos next year, so planning for the future as well. But I reflect back to what I spoke about earlier. Like, we still have 4 picks in the first 103 selections. We're going to get 4 good players here, even though we don't have a 1 or a 2 in this draft.
Are you hopeful that you'll get a deal done with Jadeveon Clowney by the end of the offseason?
Yes, I won't discuss our negotiations publicly, Sarah, but I'm optimistic that something can be done.
Be disappointed if you couldn't reach a deal with him?
I'm optimistic something will get done.
What do you like about him? What stands out to you about him?
About Jadeveon Clowney?
Well, it's the obvious, the height, weight, speed, the production, the performance, pass rush ability. Guy's a disruptive player, plays the run well. So we're doing our best to fortify our nucleus of players, and we'd like him to be a part of that.
Brian, outside of the quarterbacks that John was talking about, are there other positions in this draft that are deep when it comes to this draft? Is it a strong year for such and such, whatever that position might be?
Yeah, so without getting into particulars of like what's strong and what's weak, I would say that when I'm looking at the draft board, I'm looking at it vertically and horizontally. And what I mean by that is that there's opportunities I see, regardless of position, to populate our roster with contributing players at every level of this draft, day one, day two, and day three. And I said earlier to John, like, the part that does excite me too is there's some late round options we feel that would be good developmental upside players and have future potential to contribute for us as well.
All the information that's available to teams now, do y'all have anything like historically or the last 10 years or since the game has changed a little bit that say there's better picks to get in the sixth round at some position based on what's happened historically? And if you want another one, you better get them earlier because historically that's not a good position later? Or does that even matter?
So I think on a year-to-year basis, John, when you study your draft board, you do want to take a step back and look at it from a global perspective and see where perhaps your grades are on the draft board and where things are heavy, where things are light. So an example of that would be if it was a specific position, when you're looking at it vertically and you're looking at the position, you see you're looking at it, you might have 12 players in that column who you think are draftable. Perhaps if you see that it's really strong in the second and third round and weak in the fourth and fifth round, well, if you're thinking about drafting at that position, then perhaps your strategy is shifting, thinking like, if I have to have this position, then maybe I'm considering that position in the second and third round because it drops off in the fourth and fifth round. So I'll do that process as well as it relates to the strategy of how we go and pursue specific players. But my hope is the way the draft board will be set, that if you have it right, John, the draft board will speak to you about who the best available player is.
What kind of activity do you anticipate? Obviously, you know, watching on television, it unfolds, and then you'll find out the picks really quickly through the league information system. But just what would you do during the first round? But then I guess you're changing your board because people are getting off the board.
Correct. So because we don't have a first and second round, perhaps it could affect draft strategy as it relates to day two, based on who got drafted where, what positions perhaps got filled, what team needs were filled by other teams. So if you saw 6 quarterbacks go off in the first round and perhaps you were in that quarterback market and you thought you needed one, well, 6 teams have already solved that problem perhaps. So maybe from a strategy standpoint, you have that degree of awareness of how you're going to attack that position if you were going to go after that spot.
Seeing you now in free agency, but it's your first draft, people want to know what Brian Gain going to be like. It's easy to be conservative and just sit there. Do you, by nature, are you conservative? Are you a gambler? Or do you just have to wait and see how it comes off?
Yeah, I would wait and see how it comes off. I think it's on a case-by-case basis, John. When the opportunity presents itself to be aggressive, we'll pursue that opportunity. And when the opportunity presents itself where perhaps we have to be conservative and we have enough guys on the draft board and we have an opportunity to trade down and still get a good player that we like, we'll consider that as well.
In the opening statement, you talked about the collaborative nature of the draft. Each team has a different amount of input that they take from assistant coaches, from the medical staff. Just logistically, what is the process of consulting with assistant coaches and coaches and bringing it into what you bring into the, you know, the draft room on the draft days?
So that's a very
good question. Your name?
Stephanie,
I'm sorry. Stephanie, as it relates from a medical standpoint, our doctors and our trainers do an excellent job, and we've been collaborating with them since the football season ended. So we had obviously a great advantage of getting a jump start in the evaluation process with the Senior Bowl. So our trainers and docs were there for that as well, and then their preparations for the combine. But we are hands-on with our docs and with our trainers as it relates to process and the medical. With the coaches, we've had a great partnership, and I would say it starts with philosophical alignment, Stephanie, between Bill and I. We just firmly believe in a lot of the same fundamental belief systems on how to build a football program, football culture, the types of players that we're looking for, even drilling down to the level of the prototypical standards, the physical parameters that we want to have at every position that we believe leads to a championship caliber performance. Coach O'Brien and I meet daily through this draft process, talking draft board, talking draft strategy. I'm meeting daily with the scouting staff as well. We're in a situation now where we're starting to drill down on groupings and clusters and stacking orders of specific players in specific rounds. And Coach O'Brien and I have had a great partnership in that regard. Equally, our coaches have paired up with our scouts with position cross-check groups to build consensus. And ultimately, myself and Coach O'Brien, we got to be the consensus builders, and we got to be the final filters when perhaps we see it the same and perhaps if we see it a little bit different. And he and I got to be the ones that bring that together if the coaches and the personnel staff perhaps may see it different.
Gamble sometime on players that maybe had one good year in college, but they've had injuries. Considering the injuries you guys had last year, do you have to be extra careful? And if, like wide receiver, other than Hopkins, they can't stay healthy, do you, if you draft a wide receiver, whoever you sign undrafted, do you have to try to make sure that guy's been healthy?
Sure. So durability is something that all our scouts are asked to evaluate. Naturally, they're not doctors and medical professionals, but availability is critically important to us, John. So if players are going to be available, they've been durable players in the past. Our hope is that they'll be durable players in the future. So it's a large point of emphasis in our critical factors and position specifics as it relates to durability, production, football character, personal character, learning ability. All those things are critical factors for us. Durability is one of those things.
We got you here and they redone the weight room. What do you think about what Richardson has done so far and what you think he's going to do leading up to, say,
so for those that don't know, we hired Luke Richardson to be our senior director of sports performance. And John, I've been asked to no longer call it the weight room. It's the sports performance center, just so you know. But Luke is a highly skilled individual at what he does. He hired a great staff. Equally, we've overturned our nutritional element of our operation. And really, I got to thank the McNairs for believing in our vision to improve, upgrade, and ascend our sports performance operation and our nutritional element here. We're hoping that's going to pay big dividends for us down the road in terms of player health, durability, and availability.
Does that mean he's changed the cafeteria, or guys have to be changed what they eat away from the facility?
We've invested a lot as it relates to the football facility, the sports performance room. And where the old strength and conditioning room was, we certainly invested a lot in the equipment, but it's also been a philosophical shift in how we train and how we prepare and how we build our guys. Equally, from a nutritional standpoint, we hired a gentleman named Ladd Harris, a little partner with Luke Richardson in that regard, and he's been a great asset, great resource. And the education part of it, John, is equally important as it relates to nutrition. Education, and then third, the execution and follow-up of it. But we couldn't have accomplished what we did in the short amount of time in that operation without the support and the backing of Bob and Cal McNair.
You and the coaches have to do the whole Richardson program too?
I don't. As you can see, I'm not in that program right now. But 50 pounds ago and 20 years ago, perhaps I was. But we're very optimistic and positive about the changes we made in that area.
How did having the Texans coaching staff coach the Senior Bowl affect your draft strategy?
So I would tell you this, Sarah. I had one other experience of doing this with another coaching staff when I was with the Miami Dolphins, and the insight it gives you in terms of the head start for the coaches is exceptional, because often the coaches will get involved in the personnel process a little later in January, closer to February, like right before the combine. So this gave our coaches and our coaching staff probably about a month ahead of time to get a head start on their stacking orders and their grades for the players.
Especially because you don't have a first or second round pick, so you're looking more closely at guys who may go later.
So not necessarily. The way I would answer that, Sarah, is you're actually coaching the players. It's not interviews with players. It's not interviews with coaches that have coached these players. You're actually getting hands-on, applicable experience on that interaction moment. And equally from a scouting perspective, I'm able to speak to the coaches about, hey, how well does he do in the classroom? What's his football character like? It's not theoretical. It's not sourced. I'm getting it directly from the coaches who are working with these individuals at the Senior Bowl. So it was a great asset. On the flip side of that, there's a reason why we were coaching in the Senior Bowl. And I would prefer for us to be playing in January and February and perhaps maybe not doing that. But we took advantage of that opportunity by really drilling down on the evaluated portion of it. Yes, the performance on the field was critically important, but it was the football intangible element that revealed itself very well for us as it relates to learning a lot about those guys.
What was your philosophy on the 30 visits? Was it guys you didn't talk to at the combine, guys who've been injured? Kind of take us, guys who were not going to go in the first round. Take us through your philosophy on that.
So I would backtrack, John, all the way back to the Senior Bowl where we, you know, in all the All-Star games where we have a chance to sit down and interview a lot of these players. So we took advantage of that moment to get those interviews done. As it relates to the 30 visits that you can bring in here, for those that may or may not know, you get 30 chances to bring players into your facility to do a visit. Some of those invites, John, are based on medical. Some of those invites maybe are on one or two football or personal character items that you need clarification on. Others may be it's a late round guy that maybe you're not sure you may draft or you want to consider him as a priority free agent. So we've brought players in at every level. We brought in guys who we might think are day two players, equally day three players, and other guys that may end up as priority free agent types. But the medical, the football character, the personal character usually are the three things that weigh bringing those players in or not.
Brian, when you have, you've talked about the case-by-case basis. I was wondering if you could expand on it a little bit. When you have a backup quarterback situation like in Philadelphia where Nick Foles just won a Super Bowl and here Deshaun got hurt, we've seen the way the league reacts sometimes to those things, very reactionary. Does that change how you approach the draft, knowing that what other teams may move up a little bit and be a little bit more aggressive at taking quarterbacks? How does that impact you and your evaluation? Do you adjust to what you see is happening to the board, or do you kind of have to stick firm on best player available?
Yeah, best player available combination with need obviously is the best selection. If you can accomplish that, that's great. But the board will always speak to you. The draft board will tell you who the next best player is. And then at that stage, if there's two or three guys there, you got to measure based on the composition of your roster, based on maybe your own roster situation, and then perhaps what may be available to you in the draft, a spot behind you, two spots behind, three spots behind. So to answer your question, you certainly got to be cognizant about what's going on during the draft, based on supply and demand, so that if you're intent on taking a certain player at a certain spot, if the supply is low, perhaps that player's value might get pushed up even more if another team is chasing the same type of player. We're competing with 31 other teams for the same pool of players. So it's always going to be important to know who's getting selected and what other team needs are getting met. So I would tell you that the best pick that you can make is when it combines best available with player need, but you better be aware of what the other teams are doing. So some of that, because some of those selections can affect your strategy.
Brian, with all your time in different roles and now all your time here, all your experience, how comfortable have you felt building up to this process in the role you're in now, in the, you know, the decision-making role, and how comfortable do you anticipate being on Thursday, Friday, Saturday?
So with great humility, I would answer it this way. I've been doing this for 20 years in scouting and in personnel. I've had the opportunity to be a general scout. I've done pro scouting, scouting. I've done college scouting. I've been a director. I've been an assistant general manager. I've had great partners, great mentors, great people to learn from. At some point, you do have to trust your training and you do have to trust your instinct. But also, it goes back to preparation. Preparation will lead to best execution.
You mentioned something early on about you know, your general theory on the draft and maybe getting more at bats. Do you feel like you have the assets to do whatever you need to do this particular draft, not drafting till the third round, but having those three?
Absolutely, and I'll allude back to what I said earlier. If you can get four of the top 100 players in the draft, you're doing pretty good. And perhaps that might not be player 1 through 50, But based on your grades and your rankings, if you have the chance to get four of those guys, I'll be happy for our team and its future plans.
How do you investigate the people that are considered character questions? Like, there's character questions and then there's big concerns. Like, how do you kind of separate somebody who might have been immature in the moment and somebody who could be good later on?
That's a good question, Stephanie, and I would tell you I'd answer it this way. As it relates to measuring character, I think about minor, major. If it's a minor characteristic, you're studying it on a case-by-case basis. You want to know the whys. If it's a major characteristic, you're certainly assessing risk. I think when you draft players, that's what you're doing. You're trying to eliminate your margin for error. You're trying to assess risk, whether you're taking them in the first, second, sixth, or seventh round. But I'm very sensitive to the character portion of our process, and we spend a lot of time evaluating that with our scouts because I'm critically aware of that impact on the locker room, in the weight room, in the training room, when you get out to the practice field. I want to know exactly what we're getting from a football and personal character standpoint. The other thing about that too, Stephanie, I'm certainly aware of this, is we're bringing players into our community here in Houston. And that weighs heavy on me. I want to make sure we're bringing good character people here into the community, into the city of Houston.
Not the weight room, the Sports Performance Center.
That's right. I'll meet you in there after this.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. All right.